This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. It's 8 o'clock on bump day. It's time for Blue 42.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Good morning, Bump. How are you now?
What up, fellas? I'm doing well. Danny's back, and my Dodgers are 1-0 in the World Series thus far. Another LA team to celebrate. Yay, let's get it.
Seriously, this could be LA's year.
It could be.
I'd rather it be.
For this my whole life.
I'd rather it be Tampa Bay's year. You know, you got the Tampa Bay Lightning, Tampa Bay. Come on.
Nah, Tampa Bay is like rooting for Bloodbath and Beyond. Like, it's like the Rays are like a chain store, man.
Come on, that's Kitsy's team. That's my mom's team.
Yeah.
Kitsy's not going to take kindly
to that one. She's the only diehard Rays fan I've ever known.
Probably.
That's always been my question of like, who are actually like, yes, the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yep, that's like my mom, a couple of my high school, because I went to high school in St. Pete, Florida, and yeah, that's pretty much it. Bumps Dodgers, 1-0. Clayton Kershaw, 1-0. Clayton Kershaw looking good. The Seahawks red zone offense looking good. Wow, look at that transition, Paul. Bump, why are the Seahawks so good in the red zone?
Red zone. When you're in the red zone, it's about being patient and not panicking. As a player and as a coach, sometimes when that field shrinks, you feel like things have to happen so fast. And the Hawks do a great job of keeping their patience. Now you look at their concepts. They are really good at the mesh concepts. Have players crossing the field, trying to get rubs off the defenders. That's exactly what happened with DK Metcalf, how he scored that touchdown against the Vikings. It was a mesh concept. And then they're great at attacking the corners of the end zone. Tyler Lockett is one of the best in the NFL, in my opinion, at attacking the corner of the end zone and leaving space for Russell Wilson to work. And then you have a quarterback who's going to fight in there and drop a dime. Then let's not forget, you have powerful running backs with Chris Carson. Travis Homer has a red zone touchdown this year off a little check down. So them being patient, receivers understanding the mesh concepts, and then Russell Wilson just being able to fire rockets in there right into the gut of a receiver and not making them have to extend and make the real difficult catches. So they're on the same page. It's impressive what they've been doing in the red zone this year.
Can they keep it up?
Yeah, I think they can. I really do, Danny, just because of some of the things I just said and that a guy like DK is getting better and better. And because we still haven't seen Chris Carson. We've seen him, but we still haven't really had Chris Carson moments. And in the red zone, I mean, remember last year, I think it was last year where he just ran over this guy at the goal line for the Carolina Panthers. It doesn't matter. You can blitz the A, the B gap and send pressure. Chris Carson, when he lowers those shoulders and delivers a boom, most likely he's going to get a couple of yards. You get him down on the 1 of the 2 yard line, he's going to get it done. So we're still waiting for Chris Carson, baby. He's on his way.
They've scored the most touchdowns in the league, and in the red zone, they're scoring at an 89% clip touchdowns, which is just an insane number. You mentioned DK Metcalf, Bump. You mentioned Chris Carson. How does Tyler Lockett fit into this offense now?
Tyler Lockett, he is, in my opinion right now, he is like your typical slot. He's the guy that you're going to depend on third downs, even though they haven't been great on third downs. He's going to sit in the zones. He's going to be great in the scrambles. Last year, he was the guy who did almost everything. He had to go deep. He had to catch the screens. He had to be good on third downs. Now he's got some pressure taken off of him. You have a young man who can go over the top of any defense and apply pressure. So that's going to open up things for Tyler Lockett. Now, I wonder if he's okay in that position with that role. I think it's vital. I think it's huge. You need a guy that you can rely on. He still has some of the best hands on the team. So that's his new role. He's always been the catalyst, but now it just looks a little different. We'll see if it changes throughout the week. Some teams start paying more attention to DK and Lockett starts opening up more. But right now, he's your slot. They used to call it third and bump at Washington State because you knew if it was third and five or six, I was probably going to get the rock. I think that's where Lockett is now.
That is amazing.
Question two.
I want a third and bump t-shirt.
Third and bump. Colby Parkinson. He's practicing now. He's on the PUP list, but he's eligible to come off. If he's getting healthy and he's going to play, which tight end's on the bubble?
Man, you got to look at a guy like Jacob Hollister, who is a great receiving tight end. Probably not the best when it comes to blocking, just because of his size. He's an in-betweener. And then Luke Wilson, who is pretty much just a blocking tight end. I mean, he'll get a couple targets, a couple catches, but not a guy that you're going to depend on in the pass game. Now, we just got to wait and see what Colby Parkinson, what he looks like, you know, how he develops. But he was brought here to catch the football. And with the way this offense is looking, if he's healthy, he may get opportunities. Now, we're seeing Greg Olsen really start to get acclimated to this offense. So you got to look at Jacob Hollister. I think Jacob Hollister is still the better option right now. But Luke Wilson, Jacob Hollister, those are the guys who are going to battle for a spot on this team if this young man can show that he's ready to go. Now, he's coming off an injury that I had. And the problem with that is, can you believe you can put your foot in the ground as hard as you can, shift your weight, and go the other way? It took me, I was back practicing for a week, and I made the Hawks take me back to the hospital. I go, look, show me the x-rays again, because I need to believe that I can put my foot in the ground and really go that way, because you still feel it. I have a screw in my foot till this day. You can still feel it. So it's mental at this point. But that was, what, 13 years ago? So maybe the technology is better, the screws in there a little tighter. I don't know. But it's going to be a mental game for this man.
Considering there's been no preseason and that training camp's been a little bit different, no OTAs, no mini camp, what's the realistic expectation for any of the players who have dealt with injuries at the beginning of the year that haven't really been practicing and working with the team, whether it be Daryl Taylor, or we take a look at tight end and it's Parkinson? What are we really expecting out of them? Are they going to be able to contribute when they're probably very behind the eight ball as far as knowing what their role is and knowing their responsibilities?
Yeah, it's going to be tough for them, Paul. I think they can contribute, but I also think that it's going to take a special type of player to have a lot of contributions. We look at LJ Collier last year. He was, what, he missed six weeks, and we never really got him going. So you should lower your expectations when it comes to these rookie guys being asked to contribute, just because they don't know what they don't know. They've never been in an NFL game. They've never had a preseason game. They're going to go into stadiums that are empty. There are a whole bunch of challenges that these young men are facing that guys before them have never faced. Then you compound the situation with them being young, being a rookie, not really having that experience. It's going to be tough for anybody coming off of injury to be young, to be a rookie. And if they excel during this time, they're special.
He's 6'7". He's got great hands. They're bringing him in here to be potentially, sounds like a red zone threat to me. Sounds like a guy that you'd like to excel in there. But they do have two pretty good pass-catching tight ends in Disley and Greg Olsen. It'll be interesting to see where he fits in and if he is an option. The bigger news, in my opinion, that Rashad Penny isn't practicing yet. I think we're going to see him before the year's out, but that wasn't a great sign that he wasn't revved up and ready to go right away.
Yeah, Rashad, I mean, I feel bad for the young man, but I also know that the Hawks are 5-0, and there's no reason to rush him back. There's no reason to rush anybody back right now, including Jamal, including Parkinson. If you're hurt, you're banged up, take your time. They're not desperate. They're 5-0. I think they can go 6-0. They're going to have a tough matchup this week, in my opinion. But there's no reason to rush guys back. You're perfect with your record right now.
Question 3. We're seeing an ineffective variant of this in Dallas that we'll get to later. Bump, what's the key to successful coach and player communication?
Man, as a coach, you have to be able to understand how your player receives information, and everybody receives information differently. NFL, it's a little less nurturing, I guess. In college and in high school is more of a nurturing environment. I think Pete Carroll does present a nurturing environment, but it's understanding how to get the best out of your player. Now, do you think a Russell Wilson would respond to a guy who just yells all the time and is super aggressive? No, that's not how Russell works. Russell is like a Zen master. He's going to sit there and breathe deeply and look into your eyes. You guys are going to have a civil, calm conversation about what's going to happen. Now, a guy like I say Marshawn Lynch back in the day, you can just be raw with him. You know, you can go back to Oakland, baby, California. Talk that California talk. And he will respond that way. So it's as a coach, understanding how to communicate with your player. Now, as a player, it's reading through the lines sometimes and getting on the same page with your coach. So it takes practice. It doesn't happen overnight. Just like a marriage, sometimes you got to work at it for a while and really try to understand what the other person is saying. They might say one thing but mean another thing. And just being transparent. A coach-player relationship is like any other relationship. The more transparent, honest you are and try to understand somebody, the better it's going to be. And I feel like that's what we're seeing out of Schottenheimer, Pete Carroll, and Russell Wilson. They're just all on the same page. They're finishing each other's sentences. You know what I mean? They're communicating at a high level right now.
That question about communication and how it works, you look at what's happening in Dallas, where you've got a new coach who's kind of a CEO supervisor type. That's kind of Mike McCarthy's job, because they're not running his offense. They're running the offense that was there before with Kellen Moore. They've got a new defensive coordinator in Mike Nolan, and you've got a defense that's not working at all. I think if you're a Dallas fan, you're okay with everything that's happening on offense. You're pulling your hair out and screaming about what in the world is going on with this defense, and then the communication becomes a huge issue.
Yeah, and what's going on with this defense? And then you got players talking about you in the newspaper. They're not dropping their names on it. They're saying this coach's staff is not prepared. So obviously the communication there is they're having trouble with it. And it must be hard. Now, McCarthy, I know Paul Gallant, how you feel about the McCarthy situation.
Get him out.
He has joined an organization that already has an offense established. And it's almost like he is the new guy trying to fit in. And that has to be hard as a head coach. You want to be the head coach and bring your system over and have guys really conform to what you're trying to do. So there are a lot of things going on in Dallas, not just with the quarterback situation, players giving up. Now you have players talking about your coaches. You have a head coach who's coming in, and he's the new guy trying to learn what everyone else is doing. So that takes away from kind of his ownership. And then you have Jerry up in his suite. You know, he's probably got a cell phone that connects right to McCarthy's hip, and he calls him whenever he has a play suggestion. There's just a lot of things going on in Dallas.
Some of the concerning elements about what's going on in Dallas and bringing Mike McCarthy in, it goes back to, remember that big bombshell report that the Bleacher Report did about the Packers and all that was going wrong? Part of it was on Aaron Rodgers, but there was a part in this report about how Mike McCarthy was skipping team meetings to go to massages, and who knows if that was correct. McCarthy denied it very, very vocally, but I just think about the preparation side of things, and with McCarthy, I wonder if some of the old bad habits are enabled by somebody like Jerry Jones, who clearly wants folksy, easy to get along with coaches, as opposed to maybe the young guy, but that isn't going to do it by his way. Because he's been so averse to getting some ahead of the curve, transcendent coach like Jimmy Johnson for such a long time.
Yeah, you said preparation, Paul. Whenever your preparation is being questioned, especially in the game of football, where you have a full week, you have to figure out what your team is, what this defense is doing with front three, with coverages, a whole bunch of things that go on to preparing for a football game. You don't stand a chance. This ain't the NBA where you could take a day off and say, all right, guys, we're just going to run it back, play better. You know, they watch some film, but there's nothing intense like football. So once your preparation is being questioned, then there's some issues. And then, like we just mentioned, all the other things going on, man. You lose Dak Prescott. You got Jerry Jones. McCarthy's trying to fit in. Zeke's fumbling the football. Andy Dalton's throwing it to nobody. It's a debacle. And I don't mind seeing it go down, honestly.
I don't either.
There we go.
I like to say to all the Cowboy fans out there, you already won your NBA championship this year, right? All you Cowboy fans that are Laker fans have already won your NBA championship. So you guys can't get greedy. You guys can't get greedy about it.
Well, the Yankees didn't win. It's been hard. They didn't even make the World Series, Danny.
It's true. It's been tough. That is Blue 42. It's brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Oh, but seriously, watching them on Monday night, that's a defense that they're not confident in what they're doing. And I think you see that mostly with the linebackers. You watch them hustle to get lined up, and you watch all of the hand gesturing to try to communicate, like, okay, what are you doing here? The players are not confident in what they're running. Either it's too complicated or it's too new. And this isn't a criticism because I've watched both Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch play a lot of football, and those dudes are ballers. Like, they're really good players. It's pretty clear to me that they're in a situation where they're thinking way too much. They're having to spend way too much time diagnosing what we're supposed to do in this specific situation.
Are you speaking offensively, defensively, or both ways, Danny?
Their defense. The Cowboys' yeah. defense is their struggle to get lined up and to see who's responsible for what gap, and just watching how it looks like a team that isn't confident in what they're running.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of what the Hawks look like at some point, like around week two or three, especially in the pass game, where it didn't feel like backers were getting into the right drops, where corners weren't seeing route combinations and reacting to where they're almost hesitant. And I see that. And they get back their linebacker, Vander Esch, to have Jalen Smith, who's having a good season, but it takes a village. And when you see linebackers and corners taking false steps, not putting their foot in the ground and driving downhill, believing what they're seeing and making plays, that goes back to what Paul was mentioning, the preparation. What's their preparation like? And now you hear these anonymous players coming out and saying that these coaches aren't prepared. So if your players are saying your coaches aren't prepared, how are they supposed to get the players ready to play on a Sunday or Monday or Thursday, whenever it is? It's there's a line of there's a process to getting guys ready to go, and there are some glitches going on in their process.
If you're a player, how do you handle that? Because you're seeing the lack of preparation. I am not a Mike McCarthy fan, and I think that it has been bad enough already that the Cowboys should be thinking about what they do next. Yes, lots of money invested in him. They have all the money in the world. They're going to be fine. But McCarthy, I thought, raised an interesting point when he talked about how the players, they should handle this like men.
I've always stated this to every team that I've coached. I think it's important to handle things as men. I mean, if you do have something to say publicly that is of, you know, of most importance, I think it's important to say it to the individual, particularly in a group dynamic setting, and especially in the game of football, especially for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, that's all part of the development of our program, of the system that we're installing here.
This isn't just acting like a man. This is acting like a grown-up. I think exactly. For any of these players, if they see this bump, they need to raise this issue with the coaching staff, right? I mean, would there be serious consequences if you in your playing days told a coach, what are you doing, man? You don't seem to be that 100% engaged.
That goes back to the communication. If you say it that way, good luck to you. They might ask you to bring in your playbook in the next practice.
But what if you're right? What if you're actually right and you have teammates that can corroborate what you're saying? And if you're a good enough player, shouldn't
you guys all going to go to the owner and say this guy doesn't work hard enough? Like, how do you think that's going to go, man? You're going to get thrown out of the office.
Yeah, that's not how that works.
But it's got to be better than this, right? I mean, shoot, they quit in the middle of that game against on Monday. They quit against the Cardinals, and the Cardinals did not even play that impressive of a football game.
There are a few people on a football team who can challenge authority, and there are certain ways that you have to do it. In the NFL, I was never that guy to be able to challenge authority, and I wouldn't come at them that way. You ask questions. What do we do here? You open a conversation you're almost like you're teaching them. Like, I like this on third down. This is what I'm seeing. What are you seeing, coach? And you open up dialogue. You have conversations. But going to the principal's office and snitching on your teacher, that's never going to work.
One of the things that this makes me think of is that Seattle's defense, and for lack of a better term, we talk about it as being pretty straightforward. That it's not complex, it's not exotic. They play a lot of zone defense with very, very basic principles. They don't try to disguise everything that they're doing. It makes it easier to fix when something's going wrong. It makes it easier. Like, Pete Carroll is aware of every weakness in the defense that they play. He's seen every way in which an opponent will try to exploit it, and he knows how best to combat. It makes it easier to fix things. And I think with Dallas, where you've got it's a hybrid defense. It's 3-4 and 4-3. They're constantly moving and readjusting. They're trying to disguise what they do. I think it becomes very hard. And players, when you hear players start to, I think that what you hear when the players are talking anonymously about the preparation is that they're coming to the sidelines and saying, what do we do here? And the coaches aren't sure how they're being attacked. They're not sure what to tell them to do in the middle of the game when they're getting gouged for yardage. I don't know if the Cowboys quit. You certainly saw the defense cave in. And I think that that was a lack of confidence, but it could be effort too. It was an awful performance, and it got worse as the game went along because they had no answer to what the Cardinals were doing. And I think in part because their coaches couldn't provide them an answer of here's how you fix it. Here's what you do to stop this from happening to you.
Let's bring this back to the Seahawks then, because I think the Cowboys are a lost cause until they do something. When you look at the defensive issues they've been having, and if you're one of these players that's out on the field, and I imagine you're looking at some of these things and you're thinking to yourself, okay, we could be better in some ways. How would you raise attention on specific things to improve that you see, that you feel, to Ken Norton Jr. or to Pete Carroll?
Again, only a certain few can do that. A guy like Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright on the defense. I think eventually Jamal Adams might be able to do that on offense as Russell Wilson, maybe Dwayne Brown. And if you do have concerns or ideas, I think you present it in a way that makes it a group project. That doesn't make it, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm seeing. This is what needs to happen. It's like, hey, coach, what do you think about this? This is what I'm seeing on third down. On this route combination, would you mind if I reacted this way? Make it collaborative. As soon as you start trying to make it yours, you're not getting paid to scheme. You're getting paid to execute the scheme. So make it a group project, I think you have a shot.
That idea of how you bring up, it was one of the most fascinating things to watch from the Legion of Boom, because Richard Sherman specifically, he really understood defenses. Like he knew, and that doesn't always happen for a corner because they're kind of out there on their island. But I remember very specifically a game where he's talking to Cam Chancellor about, hey, this is what they're doing. He's like, look, what they're calling is designed to beat what we're doing. Here's the only way that we can kind of stop it. And it was them having the veteran understanding of what was going on. For Seattle now, I do think it is Bobby Wagner and it's KJ Wright being able to step up and tell guys, here's how we do it. Hey, the first step is stop giving up deep plays over the top. Like that can't happen. Like that is a non-negotiable in this defense. The next thing is their run defense has been pretty good. It wasn't great against Minnesota. And I think that's kind of the next step of being able to, I think Pete's got a pretty solid formula. It's got some well-known weaknesses, and those veterans should be in position to be able to tell guys, hey, here's what we do to keep that from happening to us.
Yeah, they have experience. They've been in some battles. They got over 100 games under their belt, so their voice is a little louder, and they're the ones who I feel like can make in-game adjustments. You tweak it. You don't just abandon the scheme. It's not like, all right, we're not running cover three, guys. We're going to run cover two. It's like, no, all right, Shaq, instead of bailing out super hard on third and five, this is what they like to do. Take your time a bit. You know, flip your hips. You start to get out of there, but there's no need to fly out of there because this is what they like to do.
I think that they're going to have to find something, though, that is – something they like to do on that side against the passing games that they've been going up against. Something different has to happen. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, Danny. I am with you in that the corners have to keep making plays, but when you have this stay on top mentality, that's going to be difficult. And I'm curious as to what Shaquille Griffin, what Quentin Dunbar like, and how they maybe broach this with the defense, because it's probably going to be difficult. As you mentioned, Bump, they're not exactly made men.
Yeah, it's all about adjustments. How do you make your adjustments? Who is contributing to making these adjustments? Contributing to making these adjustments. It's a team effort, but it goes down to these coaches, man. They get paid the big bucks. They have to find ways to communicate and prepare your guys to get ready to go. And then in-game adjustments are so crucial. The guys upstairs, the guys who get no love, the guys who got the binoculars and have the headsets, who are running the numbers and the scenarios, they play a huge role in this as well, because that view from the press box is beautiful. I prefer to watch games from the 50-yard line as high as I can because you can see everything moving. So those guys deserve a lot of credit and responsibility as well.
It is Danny and Gallant. We got Michael Bumpus here with us for the entire hour. A lot of conversation about analytics to the point I don't think people know what analytics is. It's math. We're going to explain more next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Each week, it seems that there's a new opportunity for someone to rail, complain, bemoan the impact of analytics to the point I don't think we know what analytics means anymore. It's Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus is in with us. And the idea that analytics is some big, mysterious sort of creature or somebody that pops out of the side door and says, hey, here's what the analytics say. Bump, I think we need to abuse people and let them know that this analytics is just math. It's just information. It's about what is the best thing to do in that scenario or different ideas that you can have, hopefully putting a few percentages behind it. It's not some sort of scary monster that's being summoned from the depths.
No, you're right. It's according to math, this is what they like to do in this situation. Or according to a thousand other scenarios, this is what you should do in this situation. And it doesn't necessarily make it the right thing to do. It's kind of trying to predict the future. It's like, this is what probably should happen. This is what might happen. It's kind of like predicting the weather in Washington. It's probably going to rain, but you'll get 5 minutes of sunshine. Then it'll rain again. It's a gamble, but it's a high percentage gamble, I guess, because it's based off of scenarios. But at some point, forget the analytics. Talk to your players. Be a human. Feel the game. What are people saying you should do in this situation who are in your organization?
It's a healthy blend of that and the numbers. Right. And analytics are numbers. They're not a strategy. That's what to me, and I think to Danny as well, is something that makes all these people just lose their brains over that word.
Yeah. Here's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, one of my absolute favorites, a real guy who's very plugged in and never has any agendas. Here's what
wow.
he has to say.
You love him.
Yeah, absolutely. here's what he has to say about the impact that analytics and quantum analysis has had.
As these organizations hire analytics departments, smart, brilliant, mathematical minds who have great influence over the football operation, the coach now has cover. The coach, and it's not just the coach has cover. I think some coaches feel like, I better do what the analytics person is saying because
the owner
I'm not
hired
the one eating,
them and everybody.
I'm not the one eating lunch with the owner.
Right.
That's ridiculous. Imagine that. The analytics people are bullying the football coaches into making decisions.
Excuse me, sir.
Football coaches are be like, oh, I better do it because the nerd told me to. That is insane. Like, that part of it is, look, if anything, the football coaches are saying, like, don't you tell me how to manage situations that I've spent my entire life understanding. Don't try to tell me what the numbers say to do in this situation. Instead, it's, oh, poor Romeo Crennel. He was badgered by the analytics people to go for two when his team was up seven.
Why can't nerds be bullies? It's fine. It's the next evolution.
They're and data bullies.
That idea of coming back, and it does come back to that Romeo Crennel. I think that was the most obvious example. And it's something the Seahawks tried 4 years ago, and it didn't get as much attention at the time. Up seven, late in the game, and you're lining up to kick the extra point or two-point conversion, you go for the two-point conversion. And the idea to me is pretty straightforward, which is, hey, if you get it, you're up two possessions. So the upside of it is huge. And I think it's like 46% of the time that a two-point conversion, you're up two, and it's essentially clinching the game. Like the impact that has on your chance to win. What you're risking, well, you're not going to lose because of it. The other team's not going to go for two if they score a touchdown. You're giving up the possibility that a touchdown will tie. And I can understand the rationale of saying, I don't want to do that. I want to kick I want to kick the extra point. I want to go up eight. I want to make them do everything right. I want to make them thread the needle. I want to put the pressure on them because I'm not sure how they'll handle it. Not only do they have to get a touchdown, then I don't think it's a slam dunk decision, but I kind of like the idea that you go for the throat. And it's not some sort of bad, dumb decision to make like Rich Gannon intended to think.
No, you want to put him away. You want to win the game right now. It's exactly what Zimmer was thinking with the Vikings down in Seattle. Like, I want to win it right now. I want to be in control of this situation, and it just didn't happen. I see nothing wrong with that. The data people, the analytics, they cloud it sometimes because this games are based off of human error, human mistakes, human decisions, and that's what creates this data anyway. And then you got a guy like Carmel who's been in the league 100 years. He's the analytics. He's the data. He's the one who's been in these situations. He's feeling the pulse of his team. And that's another thing. Coaches communicate with their players. What do you guys like on this play? How are you winning your matchup over you? Can we manipulate the defense this way? That has nothing to do with analytics. That's just humans communicating and being in a moment together. Data and analytics have no emotion, and they have no communications with humans making errors.
It's really funny. Zimmer was asked about that play. When he went for it on fourth down against the Seahawks, his answer was, you don't have time to get input from the numbers. Like, you don't have time to listen to that. Things happen too fast. He made the decision that sort of someone in situational analysis would, that math would say was the better decision, but he didn't listen to it at all. And that's why I was like, well, he made the right decision, but that's a bad process. I want the coach to know, hey, here's strategically over history how this plays out and what the numbers would say over what's happened over history. And I want him to factor that into how he feels about that play in the moment. I want him to be able to put in one part of his head what statistically, what the probabilities say. And then for him to say, like you're saying, Bump, incorporate, like, we're getting our butts kicked in the middle and I don't trust us to be able to block Aaron Donald in this play. So I'm going to go against the numbers because I don't think it applies in this situation. I don't want someone saying, I know what's right by my gut. Like, no, you should get the information.
The problem is, though, that you only have 40 seconds for that generally, right? And yeah. I'm not exactly sure what the best way would be to relay that information. Because I'm with you. I think that it would definitely help a lot of these guys who have an idea of what helps. But all of a sudden, there's 40 seconds left. Maybe there's 30 seconds left because you're in a no-huddle situation. And do you want to have some person that's in your headset going, excuse me, sir, did you know that the probabilities of getting this touchdown right here are 73%? Like, do you want that in your ear? I'd lose my mind.
He definitely can't have that voice. Yes. Like, he's got to have some more. He's got to talk okay. to his chest.
So it's like Morgan Freeman instead. Okay, that might make it a little bit more palatable. But so you have that side of it. And also, it's not like these coaches could either do it themselves and go to like some sort of spy decoder too to say like, oh, this scenario, I do this, you know? That's the big problem here is the amount of time in between plays. Because I am with the people that think that, yes, by the numbers, let's introduce these numbers. But at the same time, too, sometimes the numbers don't factor in. Like what we saw in that Texans and Titans game where the Texans defense stinks. The Titans red zone offense is the best in the NFL. So that means that they're probably going to get every single two-point conversion attempt that they take anyway, or that they're going to score on you because of the way that their offense has been playing. So if you can make this a two-score game, that's probably the only way as Houston, the Texans, with that bad defense of yours, you're going to win this game.
When a coach is making decisions, imagine this process. What's the down and distance? How much time is left on the clock? What they have a play sheet. This is what we like to do in these situations. You got people communicating in his ear. This is what they've been doing in this situation. And then you want to add in a guy with a calculator telling you that this is what you should do in this situation. And then, like you mentioned, Paul, only 40 seconds to make that decision. Now, I'm sure there are guys who lean on the data and have that in their process. I can tell you as a head coach, and this is high school football, head coach, offensive coordinator, if there's too much talking going on in my headphones, I will take the headphones off and then just call my play. If there's too many people talking, this, that, and I'm like, I'll take them off, and I'm like, I'm calling my play. You guys are talking too much. I've put in the work. I've watched 25 hours of film, okay? Everyone has an opinion right now. When we lose, who's going to get all the blame? Me. So you know what? I'm going to make this decision because I put in this work.
I can't tell you how much I love that. Like, all of you are talking too much. I'm not listening to any of you. Get him to put his headset on. No, I'm not listening to you. I do have a little bit of background on how the Seahawks came to go for two, and I think it speaks to kind of this engagement of how a coach comes about those decisions. We'll talk about that next, as well as Seattle and a comparison to Fast and the Furious. It's ahead.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Just a moment ago, Danny was talking about a certain doofer scenario for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yes. Going for two against the New England Patriots. And this was something that had been set up. Seattle was up one. They scored a touchdown to go up seven. This is in Foxborough 2016, and they decide to go for two, much like the Houston Texans did on Sunday. That is something that two people had been working on. They came up with it in the offseason. It was Carl Smith, who I know was with the Texans. He might still be down there.
I think he still is.
And Pete Carroll's son, Brendan, it was Nate. And Carl said, hey, if we're going to go up seven, you better get in his ear. And that was the lobbying started earlier in that drive. So that question of how you get a head coach, all of the different things that they manage to and are juggled with, you basically have different components that start lobbying. Hey, think about doing this. We talked about this, remember? And it's about having an access and a pipeline to the coach and who he listens to. And Nate was one of the guys that Pete trusted. If I was a coach, I would want one guy who managed score, situation, and probabilities. I would want one guy who I trusted to tell me what his opinion was, and then I could decide whether I agree with it or not. I wouldn't want to have all of those things factored in there. I would want to have one guy whose judgment I understood and knew and had worked with before to tell me what he thought, and then I could decide if I agreed with it or not.
I like that. I think that's perfect because we all know you cannot see everything in a football game. You don't know everything about football. And if you do, then just stop. Stop coaching and stop participating, because there's so many moving parts and scenarios and things like that. And if you have a voice that you trust that can hold you accountable, because that's the thing. Everyone has to be held accountable. Everyone needs to be challenged in a way to make you think outside of the box or so you don't become predictable. So I like that idea, having somebody that you trust. When I've coached, I've always had one guy that I trusted the most. Scott Darrow, if you're listening, he listens every day. That was the guy that I trusted the most. I'm like, if he said something, even if I didn't agree with it, I'm thinking about it. I'm running it through my head. I'll give it every now and then. I'm like, all right, forget it. Let's do it. You like it? All right, let's do it. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But you don't know everything in this game.
Scott needs his own channel on the headset then. That's what you would need, so that you can just switch off all these other voices and listen to the trusted one.
The other thing is, when Bump talked about taking his headset off, that was something for years. Jack Pardee, who is a longtime coach in Houston, I believe it's Jack, it could be Bum Phillips. One of them didn't want to wear the headset.
Sounds like Bum Phillips, because he used to wear a cowboy hat.
It didn't want to wear the headset. And the owner was like, I want you wearing a headset. The owner, like, you have to wear the headset. And it didn't want...
I can wear a headset.
So he did start wearing a headset, but nobody knew if it was plugged in or not. they thought he might just be wearing it to satisfy the owner. He wasn't listening to anybody.
That's hilarious, with a cord just dragging around behind him. So we got some sad news in the world of cinema yesterday, guys, at least for me. I think for Danny as well, Bob. I'm not sure what your feelings are on the Fast and Furious franchise. It's the most powerful non-superhero franchise on Earth. They announced that they're only going to make two more movies. It's really sad. It's got me thinking about Dom Toretto saying goodbye to Brian Walker at the end. Excuse me, to Brian. Shoot, I forget his last name. Not good. Saying bye to Brian, a.k.a. Paul Walker, at the end of Fast and Furious 7.
It's never goodbye.
Thanks, Finn. We needed that. And it got me, of course.
It's so cheesy.
Oh, it's so
Vin
good,
Diesel
though.
Vin Diesel is the worst. But like, I love the franchise, but man, it's all about family.
Family. It's
like, say the most boring thing you can and just say it seriously. Like, it's all about Kraft cheese.
Don't even act like you didn't cry, though, at that spot.
It's never just Sprite.
It's never just Sprite. quench your thirst. Okay, so it got me to the Seahawks because I'm weird and this is how my mind works. What longtime Seahawk traditions and or figures are going to end first? Because this has been an unprecedented, unbelievable run. And at some point, there will be some changes. Some people will walk away or some things will end. And one of the things that I'm hoping ends, guys, is the Seahawks playing in these one-score games that go down to the wire. I am over that tradition. I've been over that tradition for well over a year, pretty much ever since I moved here. I need my blowouts. You know it, and I know it.
Why?
Give me a
blowout.
You don't
like them?
I don't like it every week. Come on, just give me just one change of pace, right? Just give me one easy cruise through the park. You don't need to do it every single Sunday.
No, man. I honestly, it's really fun to watch and root for this team. Would you ever go to a Fast and Furious movie where they're like, hey, they take it easy this time?
Yeah.
Hey, this time it's just cruising down Main. There's no bad guy in this one. They're just going to drive cars real fast and be friends. Like, no one would want to watch that movie.
Slow and Serious. Slow and Serious.
No one wants to watch Slow and Serious. That movie would never make it to print.
You don't want to see Brian O'Connor and his child playing while Jordana Brewster's character is hanging out with a knowing smile on her face, and then you got Dom in the background drinking a Corona awkwardly saying, family. I kind of like that idea. Like 30 minutes of that, I could do that.
I don't know how long they'll be able to sustain the success playing in those nail biters. I do think that those things... they're going to have games that break the other way. Like it's going to happen. If you play out of these next five, if you have four more one possession games, you're not going to win them all. You're not going to keep going 5-0. Things are going to bounce against you. Think about it. Three of their games have come down to one play in the final minute where if it goes a different way, they end up losing. So I don't think they can sustain this level of success. However, after watching this team and the way, Pete Carroll's just got a knack for being in ridiculous games. Like going back to college, the Bush push, the Rose Bowl against Texas, Pete Carroll's teams just end up in insane finishes.
And he thrives in it, it seems like. He loves those moments, and his teams really step up in those moments. But it's easier for them because they have some type of control over the situation. For us watching, that's the worst part about it. We have no control over what is happening out there. As a former coach and player, I feel more comfortable in those situations rather than on the media side or as a fan because of those reasons. I can contribute. I can do something to influence what's going on. And he has found a way to get those guys to thrive, which is cool. But I'm with you, Danny. If they keep doing, I mean, they're going to lose a game eventually anyway. Yeah. They're not going to go undefeated. It'd be nice if they do, but data says... analytics say that they are not going to do that.
Left the headset on for that one. So what other longtime staple of the Seahawks movie franchise is going to end first or walk away first? Because we have also had five pretty important actors that have been here for the whole ride. You got Pete Carroll, you got John Schneider, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, and KJ Wright. At some point, you would think that one of those guys is perhaps not going to be here. It's been crazy that they have been a constant now for 9, 8, almost 10 years.
Yeah. I would say it's probably Bobby. I would say that just because of the position and because I think Russell will be here longer. 2 years ago, I would have said it's probably Pete because I just didn't know how much longer he wants to keep doing it. But he doesn't see himself stopping coaching at any time in the next 5 years. So I think with that I would say Bobby.
I'm thinking KJ. I think he's older than Bobby, right? He's been around longer. He's negotiated his own contracts a couple years. He's got to re up again here pretty soon. And I think it's just father time. And I think Pete Carroll has a job here as long as he wants. As long as he's enthusiastic about it, I think Pete's going to be fine. But I think the first actor to go in this saga, this series, is probably KJ.
Yeah, it probably is. But I also could see KJ hanging around as a coach. I don't know how you guys feel about that. I feel like he's just been so a part of this culture for such a long period of time that, yeah, you might be able to play elsewhere, but wouldn't you want to stick around and find a way to stick around a little bit longer?
Certainly could. The other thing is, he's moved to strong side linebacker without much us anybody making much of a fuss about it, and he's probably had his two best games of the season.
Yeah, he's been awesome. He really has.
He's been tremendous these past two games.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like if you take a look at the defense this year, who has been the most reliable defender because of availability and who's been out there, it probably has been KJ Wright. So you can text in 710-710 on the Vizzy's Hard Seltzer text line. What longtime staple of the Seahawks movie franchise might end first? Michael Bumpus, your time with us has ended. I hope that it was not the slow and the serious. I appreciate so much that you contributed that line to this program, and we look forward to having you on Friday to get ready for the Arizona Cardinals.
All right, guys, have a good one. Talk to you soon.
He is Michael Bumpus again, joining us every Monday for the Pete Carroll Show, and on Wednesday and Friday in the 8 o'clock hour. It's Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle. We know how awesome the Seahawks offense has been thus far this year, but we are going to give you some numbers that are going to make you even more impressed next. Don't go anywhere. It's Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.